their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. What's up, Rick?
Well, I think we learned a lesson there. Don't have the intro track set so high that it blows both of our eardrums.
Yeah, you know.
Fortunately, I don't think our listeners will experience that, but
no,
woke me up.
We're awake now, live from the mountain stronghold here in mysterious Colorado. What's our topic for today?
Well, it's a mysterious one, sort of. No, it's on post-processing tips.
Oh, good.
Yep. And it's going to be pretty agnostic of the exact tools that you're using. There are a couple times where we might mention something specific, but in general, it should apply to about everything that people are using.
And a few weeks ago, when we were talking about photography as a craft, as our topic, I think it was important. We mentioned how post-processing is extremely important to us from the standpoint of giving us control over the images and the final output in ways we couldn't do in camera.
Right.
Or even just with a basic, you know, raw conversion software. So these tips will be mostly with respect to raw processing rather than... you know, it's not going to be hardcore Photoshop or anything like that. We both use Lightroom and Photoshop, but we've used other RAW converters in the past, and I think you still have a few.
I still have Capture One that I use occasionally.
And they're all good. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. But the idea here is that these tips will be, like you said, agnostic. And they apply really to any RAW processing or even any image processing workflow that you might have.
Yeah.
So this is a lowercase workflow. We're just talking about the editing steps. So let's jump into this then, I guess.
Why not?
Hey, feet first. And so the first one, which is like early on in the workflow, is something we've talked about for a really long time, but it's pretty critical. I mean, it's important.
Okay.
It's important. And that's has to do with contrast, right? And the tip is to consider adjusting your contrast settings by whatever tools you have. It could be as simple as the contrast slider, the tone controls, the white and black points, whatever.
It could be a levels or curves tool.
Any of those things. You want to do that before you adjust saturation and color.
Yes.
And why is that, Rick?
Well, with pretty much every RAW converter I can think of, when you increase the contrast, saturation will go up as well. And so colors that might not look all that saturated prior to using those tools suddenly will go zowie. And so if you've already dialed in saturation, then one of two things will happen. Either you'll have to readjust your other settings because they're now just too intense and your saturation is too high, or you'll inadvertently creep into oversaturated images. And that's the more likely of the two.
And those can just look cartoonish and garish. It's not fun.
So you want to be a little bit careful.
So work your way, contrast first, then color.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real key. Now, related to that is, you know, one of the great things about raw images is that you're able to recover a tremendous amount of shadow and highlight detail. But when you do that, you know, like let's just say you take your shadows sliders, you know, you pull the shadows all the way up, and you pull the highlights all the way down, which is, you know, completely reasonable, depending on what you're trying to do. But you're going to get an awfully flat looking image when that happens. So what do you do if you've adjusted those highlights and shadows? What should you do next?
Well, your friend is something that adds contrast. So you'll take your contrast slider potentially and put in a little bit more contrast, or play a little bit with levels tool or whatever you're using just to restore a little bit of ideally like mid-tone contrast to your image.
Exactly.
So it doesn't look flat.
I see it a lot with bad HDR.
Yeah.
You've compressed the tones so much that everything becomes a mid-tone.
Yeah.
And you have to then go back in and say, no, some things need to be dark and some areas need to be light.
Mm-hmm.
And reestablish those relationships.
But where I find this handy is sometimes if the lighting that you're having to deal with is just a little bit on the harsh side, you know, think some variant of midday lighting,
mm-hmm.
doing that combo of a little bit of a shadow movement, a little bit of highlight and contrast can just soften the light a little bit so that that image looks nicer.
Yeah.
And you don't want to use extreme amounts, just a touch, and it'll mm-hmm. take some of the harshness out of it.
And that's related to what the next thing is on our list. Some raw processing software let you tinker with the initial processing settings. It's often called a profile.
Mm-hmm.
And this is certainly true with Lightroom, but it's also true with other programs.
Yeah, like Capture well. One, like
yeah.
we were talking about earlier.
And
it's true with others.
And this is a really huge thing. And you can think of the profile, again, it depends on your editor. There will be a default. With Adobe, it's called Adobe Color.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very similar to the styles or picture controls that you would find in your camera. And you can ostensibly think of this as the way to kind of mimic that. But that's not how I use them. I don't think that's how you use them either. This used to be something called calibration.
Mm-hmm.
It's called profile or whatever. But you can change that to a low contrast option in some cases. You can certainly do it with Lightroom. And I think you can do it with some of the other programs as well.
Yeah.
And what it does and why I like it so much is because if I switch the profile from sort of the default, which you know, it was a perfectly good out-of-the-box setting, to something very low contrast, the equivalent of setting it to, say, on my Nikon cameras, camera neutral or even camera flat.
Mm-hmm.
Lightroom users can use Adobe neutral as an option. But a low contrast setting, it automatically opens up the highlights and the shadows before you've started moving your sliders around.
Right.
So for that same situation like you were talking about where you've got a little bit of harsh light, can't do HDR. I came into situations like that all the time. You're kind of shooting into the light or it's a little bit harsh. Switching to a low contrast profile gets me to a flat or low contrast starting point, and then I can build the contrast where I want it to later.
Yeah, local adjustments.
Right.
You're brushing it in, you're doing a gradient, whatever, and lots of raw conversion tools have that feature.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it goes back to what you were saying before. You don't want that flat, everything's a mid-tone as your final image.
No.
But you want the control of putting the contrast where you need it. So then you can choose these are the dark areas and maybe use your brush or right. gradient or whatever, or these are the highlights. That coupled with some then curves or levels adjustments works really great.
Yeah. And we've previously, just when we were talking, talked about situations where that works really well. And two of the things that we talked about were stream photography, you know, where you mm-hmm. can have, even in overcast conditions, which is what you normally want for streams, you still have a large contrast range, and it can just be nice to start pretty flat and then paint in the contrast on rocks and things like that. And then you mentioned bird photography and other kinds of wildlife photography.
Yeah.
That it works well for you.
It does. It really, those images I find, because a lot of times you're doing wildlife photography in fairly, maybe not midday light, but certainly more direct
mm-hmm.
sunshine. I find they really look better. It opens up some of the contrast just by default looks a little bit too harsh
mm-hmm.
when it comes out of the camera.
Yeah.
So setting it to a lower contrast setting really allows it to look nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that goes into the, you know, we were kind of just hinting to it, but the next thing on our list is talking about local tools. So these are really important to learn.
Gosh, yes. I think that makes a huge difference in the image quality and just your satisfaction with the image. If it's just a global conversion, it can look kind of snapshotty, frankly, if that's a word. You know, the highlights are blown out. Or you try to recover them, and then it takes the sparkle out of other portions of the image, you know, which doesn't look very nice. So tools where you can just put an edit in locally are wonderful. And you definitely have to develop an eye for it. You have to be able to look at an image and figure out what will work, what won't work. But, you know, that's just true with a lot of photography. It takes some time.
It sure does. But
it's worthwhile.
It is. And here's the thing. 15 years ago, I'll go back a little bit farther in time, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we would have been talking about having to go into Photoshop to do most of those, you know, using Photoshop brushes and adjustment layers or just whatever, you know, to do localized stuff. But pretty much many of the third-party RAW converters, at least, maybe not the one that comes with your camera, but they offer some kind of brush, gradient, or whatever selection tools that you can then use to apply just about any of the raw adjustments that they would have had in the standard sliders. So you can adjust exposure locally. You can adjust contrast, shadows, highlights, all those features. And that's a really powerful tool if you can do it while your image is still in the raw format, because it's not only non-destructive, but you're getting better quality out of it as well. So learn those. Now, let's talk about, speaking about Photoshop and plugins. Sometimes you need to leave your RAW converter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when it gets you so far, but there's reasons to go into another application. This could be just launching a plugin, like the Nik plugins or Topaz or whatever, directly from your RAW processor, or going into Photoshop. I know we both use Photoshop a lot.
You don't have to, though.
No, there's advantages to it, but yeah. But what are some tips you can do if you're going to go into Photoshop or a plugin? Because these are tools that allow us to go further than the raw tools, or provide us with a way of making sort of different kinds of adjustments to color and contrast and detail than what our raw converter would allow us to do just on board.
Right. Well, I think the key thing is a bit of conservatism on your settings. You know, one of the things I always like to do is, you know, if you think about the histogram that you're looking at in your RAW converter, if you can just kind of picture that, I like to do my contrast adjustments so I leave some room on the left and the right. And what I mean by that is I don't have an absolutely black point in the image. I don't even strive for that. I don't want that. I want something that's dark gray. And then on the other side, something that isn't pure white, that's backed off a little bit. And the reason is you put it into a plug-in, and with some of the effects that you're going to use, all of a sudden, once you apply that, even at conservative amounts, it goes zing, and now you've got hard blacks that are completely blocked up or blown whites. And
For the record, Photoshop doesn't actually make a zing sound.
Zing?
It doesn't? But it feels should. Like it in your head.
Yeah, it should. That would be kind of nice.
The zing plugin. Yeah. Only for when we'll patent that.
Right.
We're going to trademark that one, the Image Doctor Zing plugin.
Yeah.
Zing with an exclamation point.
And then what about sharpening?
Well, you know, that's that kind
clarity.
Of, you know, any of those tools. Sharpening in particular, we'll talk about sharpening in a minute more specifically, but you know, just like you were saying about leaving a little headroom on your histogram so that you, I guess the thing to remember is this: when you, 99% of the time, there is a special case that we won't go into, but for the most part, when you launch a plugin or Photoshop from your RAW converter, so you say open in Photoshop, open in Color Effects, or open in, you know, whatever it is, your RAW converter is exporting out a TIFF file. Could be a PSD Photoshop file, could be a JPEG, but we don't do that. So you've baked in everything. You no longer have non-destructive adjustments. So leaving that headroom means you're capturing as much of the tonal range as you can get, because you can always add the contrast later.
Yeah.
And the same is true with tools that enhance micro contrast, sharpening, clarity, whatever it might be.
Texture, structure.
Yeah. Those can produce halos. Now, you might not see those halos in your RAW converter, but if you run your plugin and you start enhancing contrast. And I see this the most when I'm using a black and white tool such as Silver Effects Pro. Great tool, but mm-hmm. it enhances edge contrast, and then you might start seeing halos.
Yep.
So I advocate backing off sharpening. In fact, a lot of times I just don't even mess with it. I just disable the raw sharpening altogether. Just turn it off. You know, so disable it, set it to zero, whatever that way is. You don't have to, but you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I do that is because I re-import my image back to my raw converter, in this case Lightroom. And one of the cool things about most of these raw processing software editors is that they'll work on non-raw files, meaning you can use sharpening and all the adjustments that you have. But when it works on the non-raw file, unlike Photoshop, it's making the adjustments in a non-destructive way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sharpen a PSD file in Lightroom to get it to where I want. And if I don't like it, I can undo it without having to go back to Photoshop.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where personal taste can really vary.
And I won't go too far into what I do. It's just that mysterious option you were alluding to.
Right, right. No, and you know, you can always make it more complicated. There's fancy ways to do it, and they're great, but you don't have to go there.
Right.
So, you know, but talking about those things, when we talk about sharpening, you know, any of those tools that enhance micro contrast, whether it's detail, sharpening, texture, clarity, whatever it's called, those can be really easy to overdo.
Yeah.
Especially the clarity, structure, texture kinds of tools.
Yeah. And depending on which tool you're using, you might want to be really careful about what you do with capture, sharpening, and some of the other things. Mm-hmm. There's been a trend over the last decade of manufacturers deciding that what photographers really like are super zowie images right off the bat, meaning lots of contrast, high degrees of saturation in the profile, and lots of sharpening. And it might look pretty when you first bring up the image, but you've got nowhere to go if you try processing it in other tools. Just one thing I'll mention, you know, since I mentioned using Capture One, I have yet to use a camera where I didn't have to back off the settings. The Capture One default sharpening settings are just really, really high, and they'll cause you problems in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's kind of a tool-specific
tip. And then as a side note on that, see, like there's people who get carried away very easily with, ooh, isn't clarity cool? Or, ooh, right. You know, like, it's a neat effect. But it's very easy to go overboard when you use it in the global sense. In other words, you just take the, you know, the clarity slider and just crank it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that might look cool. And the tip with any of these things, that one in particular, but lots, sometimes an enhancement, when you drag a slider to the right or to the left, and I guess we should point out that sliders work both directions. You don't always have to use them in the positive direction, right? But sometimes if you look at your whole image, you go, wow, that really did some wonderful things on the rocks here. But then you look at the sky and you go,
it's so crunchy.
The sky doesn't look right. It looks uneven. It looks crunchy, right? When you see that, that should be a hint. A little light bulb should go off. The Image Doctor's Zing filter should kick into your head.
Is that like a smack on the back?
Yeah, it's the Zing filter is kind of like, what was I, you know, I could have had a V8, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's for a certain audience.
Old.
Right.
Like us.
Yeah. But that's the clue for me to go, I think I need to apply that locally, mm-hmm. either with a brush or a gradient. You know, it just depends on the area that I'm trying to select. It works great for just backing off. Use the local tool to back off on something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the sky got too saturated or too dark, so you just change it. So, those local tools, applying things locally, like detail, like sharpening, and we're going to talk last about noise reduction, very powerful tools. So we get a lot of questions about noise reduction, at least I do. And I think people, this would fall into our category of what photographers obsess too much about. We mentioned it a little
bit.
I'm not using, for the most part, I'm not using third-party noise reduction tools anymore.
Me either.
I mean, I have some.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're bad, but they're workflow disruptors if that's all you're going to do for an image.
And I just don't find them really necessary.
Right. So the first thing we had mentioned before was like, do you even see the noise on the print?
Right.
Or the output size? Because you might not.
Yeah, if you're sending it off to Instagram, you're probably not going to see it.
Right.
There's almost no chance.
But the other thing to keep in mind is that noise reduction is always a form of blurring. You're going to lose detail. And so you want to learn some techniques to help you mitigate the loss of detail when you apply noise reduction. Because if you just crank the noise slider up, you know, the noise reduction tool up, you get some really weird plasticky looking images. It just doesn't look good. So one thing you should do is, regardless of your software, is go in there and really look and get some detail information on how those, you know, what the sliders are. Because, for example, in Lightroom, there's not only a noise reduction slider, but there's a detail slider, right? And that
and
can be
a contrast one.
Yeah. Right. And the detail one helps preserve detail. And so you don't have to leave these set at their defaults.
Nope.
You know, by any means. The other reason I like using the noise tools just in RAW is because, well, it's number one on the RAW level. And then number two, it is non-destructive. So if I go into Photoshop and apply something and it's too strong, unless I've taken special care to do the noise reduction in its own layer, and you know, it can be a pain in the butt. Whereas in Lightroom or RAW tools, I just change the settings a little bit.
Yeah. Well, here, this is a good way of thinking about it, because I suspect a lot of people have heard this tip at some point in their lives. It's the idea of, if you're applying a lot of noise reduction, then one thing that you might want to do before you finish the image is add a little bit of artificial grain. And the reason you do that is the final image ends up looking a little bit sharper,
right?
You know, when it's printed or whatever. Well, okay, you could do that. And that probably made sense at a time where our cameras were really noisy and the noise patterns they produced were kind of irregular and ugly and might have weird color patterns in them. That's just not the case anymore. They're,
no.
All of them are good. So if you were going to use a trick of adding a little bit of artificial grain in at the end to make it look sharper, how about just not use as much noise reduction?
Right.
And let the natural noise in your image substitute for that grain.
I've taught, I sometimes teach a class on sharpening and noise reduction. And one of the big tips I like to give out to my clients in my workshops is to think about applying your noise reduction selectively. Because you can...
Like on a sky?
Right. You can crank it on places that don't have any detail.
Yeah.
But on places that have detail, what you find, just like you were saying, the grain pattern makes it look... So the noise isn't noticeable there nearly as much. So...
And it's not even necessarily a problem.
So unless you're trying to go for the plastic skin look, you know, just be aware of that. So those are some of our big post-processing tips, as best as we can come up with. If you've got a tip that we left out, how about you send us a note by leaving us a comment on our Facebook page, Image Doctors. Well, no, what is it? Facebook.com. I can get this right, right? Hello. I need the zing filter to hit me in the head. Facebook.com/imagedoctors. Yes, you too can have that. And leave us a note. We appreciate it. And I do want to mention that we've been getting some more comments and reviews over on the iTunes page or the Apple Podcasts, and we really do appreciate them.
Yep.
Thank you so much. If it's something bad,
just blame Jason. That would be my advice.
That works. I accept that. Well, until next time, thanks again for joining us. Don't drive off the road while listening to our podcast, and we will see you again next week.
All right. Bye-bye.